Welcome to the Collaborative Psychiatry Podcast, where we help busy primary care providers build confidence in managing mental health. I'm Dr. Daniel Suter, a psychiatrist trained in general and addiction psychiatry and currently working in collaborative and integrated care. I created this platform to make psychiatric education simple, practical, and genuinely useful for real-world medicine. Thanks to the support of our subscribers, this podcast remains completely free of commercial influence. Everything you hear reflects my own clinical experience and interpretation of the literature. No sponsorships or outside agendas. If you want to learn more about our mission, visit us at collaborative-psychiatry.org. We've got in-depth courses, clinical tools, and lots of other subscriber resources. These quick take episodes are designed to give you high-yield, evidence-based tools that you can start using right away in clinic. If you're interested in more in-depth learning, check out our full-length CME course on managing depression in primary care through our website. It's about an hour and a half long and covers everything from diagnosis to medication selection, augmentation approaches, ketamine, and more. And lastly, if you find this quick take helpful, please don't forget to subscribe or leave a review. And check out our website for downloadable clinical tools and resources. It will help you put the information you learn here into practice with your patients. Let's get into it. Today, I want to talk about a high-yield topic in mental health for primary care, and that's the use of self-report psychiatric screeners. These are tools your patient can complete themselves. What's great about these is that they allow you to gather meaningful data on your patient's mental health outside of your limited appointment time. Today, we'll cover some general tips on how to use these screeners effectively, and then we'll get into the five specific ones that I recommend most often. By the end of this episode, you'll be able to identify a go-to screener for depression, anxiety, suicidality, bipolar disorder, and borderline personality disorder in primary care. You'll know when to use each of them, whether that's before, during, or between visits to streamline your workflow. And you'll be able to use these tools to help distinguish between things like bipolar disorder and BPD in more complex cases. The specific screeners we're going to cover here are the PHQ-9 and GAD-7 for depression and anxiety, the Columbia Suicide Severity Rating Scale, or CSSRS, for suicidality, the Rapid Mood Screener, or RMS, for bipolar disorder, and the McLean Screening Instrument for BPD. These five cover the bulk of what you'll need in primary care. We're not going to touch on psychotic disorders or screeners today, and we'll cover ADHD and substance use screeners in separate episodes. So you likely already know that screeners don't confer diagnosis. A high PHQ-9 score, for example, doesn't guarantee the patient has major depression. Diagnoses generally require further clinical context and assessment, but the screeners are very useful data points. They can support your diagnostic thinking and even point towards specific treatment options. As an example, right, a patient with a high PHQ-9 and GAD-7 score will likely benefit from an antidepressant regardless of the specific underlying diagnosis. Similarly, a positive rapid mood screen, as we'll get into, may steer you towards considering a medication with more mood stabilizing properties for bipolar disorder, as opposed to an antidepressant, which could trigger mania. So while diagnosis matters, the screen itself, as we'll touch on, can be a really strong signal which direction to take next. Now, you're obviously not going to screen for everything at every visit. Many practices already do routine PHQ-9 and GAD-7 screenings, which aligns with the US PSTF recommendations, but screening everyone for bipolar disorder, or say borderline personality disorder, isn't practical or even really indicated. So instead, I'd say let the clinical context guide you. When something in the history raises concern for bipolar disorder or BPD, that's the time to pull in a targeted screener. And unless the symptoms are acute, there's usually no need to make a firm diagnosis or start meds right away. Oftentimes, it's more effective to introduce the idea, maybe send them home with a screener, and then revisit it at the next visit. That gives you space on that first visit to build rapport and then think things through without the pressure of same-day decision-making. Additionally, sometimes having two different touch points allows you a slightly more longitudinal view of the symptoms, which can really aid in diagnosis as well. So with all of that said as context, I want to narrow in now on the specific screeners I'd recommend you be familiar with for this sort of use. There are so many possible screeners out there to help assess for the various disorders, but the ones that we're discussing today have either been validated in primary care settings, or if not, have the most overall applicability to that setting. So given the overwhelming number of screeners available, my hope is that just by simplifying it to one screener per disorder or population, it'll help make the use of these tools a little bit more algorithmic and feel a little bit less complex. When it comes to depression and anxiety, then, I'm not trying to rock the boat here. I think the PHQ-9 for depression and GAD-7 for anxiety are the best options. They're easy to use, have strong validation for use in primary care settings, and many clinics are already familiar with them because of the USPSTF recommendation for standard screening, as long as there are systems in place to help individuals who do screen positive. Because many providers are familiar with the PHQ-9 and GAD-7 already, I'm not going to spend a whole lot more time discussing them here, just to leave some time for those potentially less well-known screeners. And the first of those that I want to bring up is the CSSRS, or the Columbia Suicide Severity Rating Scale. Suicidality is a very difficult thing to discuss with patients, and it also brings up a lot of anxiety on the provider front, because we're all worried about asking things incorrectly or missing something vital in our triage of risk. Now, we could, and will, have a whole podcast dedicated to suicidality and how to manage it when it presents in primary care, but for now, I think the easiest recommendation is simply to use the CSSRS when suicidality comes up, whether that's in conversation with the patient or based off of a PHQ-9. It's a relatively simple screener. It's been validated in primary care as well as many other settings, and it can help you grade suicide risk level in someone who is endorsed SI. It's just a 6-question screener, and it allows you to classify the patient as low, medium, or high risk, and then provide some guidance around next steps for those who are medium or high risk. Spoiler alert, if they screen positive as high risk, that's someone who should be sent directly to the nearest emergency room for further evaluation by a psychiatrist. Now, one of the other big concerns that comes up a lot in primary care is the concern around bipolar disorder and antidepressants. The classic situation here is that you have someone come in complaining of depression, but when you rightly ask about a history of mania-like symptoms, they say yes, and so you're left worried that they may have bipolar disorder and questioning whether starting an antidepressant could flip them into mania. Now, we'll have many further discussions here about bipolar disorder and how to think about that diagnosis, but for now, my strongest recommendation in this kind of situation would be to use the Rapid Mood Screener for bipolar disorder. It's another short 6-question screener, and it was designed to help differentiate MDD from possible bipolar disorder in someone presenting with depression. It's been studied but not explicitly validated for broad use in primary care. However, there is data behind its use in primary care populations to help distinguish MDD from bipolar disorder, which, again, I think is the most frequent concern regarding bipolar disorder that comes up in the primary care population. There are other screeners out there for bipolar disorder as well, some of which, like the Mood Disorder Questionnaire, have also been studied and used in primary care, but the RMS's data showing it likely does the best job of differentiating more run-of-the-mill depression from bipolar depression, and that's where it's important for us. Now, speaking of bipolar disorder, one of the most common diagnoses that gets mistaken for it is borderline personality disorder. This is a very big topic. There's cultural baggage, overlapping symptoms, a lot of nuance here that we'll dive deeper into in further episodes. But in primary care, these two can be tough to tell apart. Picture a patient who comes in describing episodes of mood swings, feeling on edge, acting impulsively, sometimes going days with little sleep and high energy. It can sound like mania, but it might actually just be BPD. And making that distinction matters when you're thinking about medications and next steps. I'd say a general rule of thumb here is that if you find yourself thinking someone may have bipolar disorder, you probably also want to have borderline personality disorder, or BPD, on your differential. And the screen to use for BPD is the McLean screening instrument for BPD. There aren't a ton of great screeners out there for BPD, and none have actually been explicitly validated in primary care. But the McLean instrument has at least been studied in PCP populations and has some evidence supporting its use. It's really a pretty simple screener overall because it more or less asks patients a question for each of the DSM-5 criteria for BPD. There are 10 questions in total, and a score of 7 or above is used as the cutoff for a positive screen. This is certainly not the be-all or end-all to a BPD diagnosis, like with all these screeners, but it can be a super helpful data point. In terms of the overlap with bipolar disorder, where the McLean instrument really shines, I think, is in helping differentiate it from BPD. So if I have someone who comes in reporting impulsivity, labile moods, periods of mood elevation, sleeplessness, high energy, the main question in my mind is, okay, does this person have bipolar disorder, or is this someone more in line with BPD? If you were to just give this person the RMS or some other bipolar disorder screener, the problem is that when these bipolar disorder screenings are studied in populations that also include BPD, they really don't do a good job at all of differentiating the two. So individuals with BPD tend to come up positive on bipolar disorder screens as well, which puts us back at square one in terms of distinguishing between the two diagnoses. So the approach here, and again, this is something that could be done between appointments, is to give them both the RMS and the McLean instrument screener. If they screen positive on the RMS, but score relatively low on the McLean, you can be more assured around a potential bipolar disorder diagnosis as opposed to BPD. But if the McLean is positive, whether positive alone or positive along with the RMS, of the two, you're probably more likely dealing with BPD, or at least the BPD or quote-unquote cluster B spectrum, than somebody with bipolar disorder. That's not to say it's impossible that some individuals may have BPD and bipolar disorder, but that's certainly much less common. And I think for the general primary care population, that's probably getting us too far into the psychiatric weeds, and it's not something we should really be worrying about at this point. Now, I will say that this approach is one that I'm recommending here based off of my clinical experience and work with this population in primary care settings. There are no official guidelines around screening for or distinguishing between BPD and bipolar disorder. But I do think that using these two screeners together can be a very helpful approach to give you a better understanding of what might be going on in some of these more complex cases. Okay. So to wrap up, I think we've seen today how having a few go-to psychiatric screeners in your toolbox and knowing when to use them can really streamline your workflow, sharpen your diagnostic thinking, and guide you toward better treatment decisions. Whether it's before the visit, in the room, or between appointments, these tools let you manage complexity without adding too much more chaos to your day. That's it for today's episode. Don't forget to check out the downloadable companion resources for this episode available on our website at collaborative-psychiatry.org/quicktakes. These resources are normally available to members for a small subscription fee, but today's episode has resources up for free. You'll get access to detailed show notes, as well as links to PDFs of all the screeners we discussed today, handouts describing when to use them, including some case-based scenarios, and a tool to help differentiate bipolar disorder from BPD. If this episode made your work a little easier, please consider sharing it with a colleague or leaving a quick review on whatever podcast app you use most frequently. It really helps us reach more providers and spread this information more widely. And now, our disclaimer. The content in this podcast is intended for general educational purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine or the establishment of a professional relationship. The use of the information in this podcast in clinical practice is at your own discretion and risk. Thanks again for joining us today, and see you back here in 2 weeks when we'll get into one of the most common but often confusing questions in primary care psychiatry, which is how to switch antidepressants. We'll break it down with a practical framework that makes the process feel much more approachable. Looking forward to talking to you then.